Now, Judge Amy Coney Barrett will go to the full Senate for a vote on whether she should be the next American Supreme Court justice. Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee voted her through unanimously this morning. Missing from the vote, Senate Democrats, they boycotted the proceeding. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How closely have you been following the confirmation procedure? How important is this to you? Do you like the nominee as the next Supreme Court justice? Do you think changes might need to happen in the U.S. Supreme Court? Is this a voting issue for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Charlie Jacobs is a professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, specializing in public law, judicial process, and American politics. Charlie, welcome back.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, all right, not a lot of drama. I think people knew that this was going to pass the committee this morning. Democrats, I guess, added some excitement by not showing up. What do you make of this morning's vote?
I think that the Democrats felt as though they were cornered. They don't really have any parliamentary or procedural maneuvers to make. And sitting there and watching the proceeding unfold and then just casting their votes, I think wasn't going to be as dramatic for them as the approach they took here, which was ineffective in the sense that they were going to lose the vote either way. But I think at least it's creating for the Democrats some theater that they can use from now until the election. And of course, they can use it as a vehicle next Monday when they have, the full Senate take up this this nomination and the vote. So it was kind of their last best option for them because they're in the minority and they don't really have very many tools in their toolbox to try to affect a different path for this nomination.
Let's give a listen to the majority. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Republican, chair of the Judiciary Committee. Here he is talking to C-SPAN after today's vote.
The committee did the right thing. The judge deserved a vote up or down. Democrats chose to participate in the hearings to ask her hard questions. I think they owed it to her to show up today and vote her yes or no. They made a decision. I made a decision. It'd be wrong to deny Judge Barrett a chance to be confirmed on the floor of the United States Senate. To the American people, you have somebody highly qualified, a judicial disposition that should be the gold standard, and somebody that will apply the law, not a personal agenda.
So Democrats still pointing back to Merrick Garland, Judge Merrick Garland, not getting a vote, not getting even meetings with Republican senators in his ultimately non-successful, non-confirmation process. Compare and contrast, Charlie.
Well, I mean, the stance that the Republicans and Lindsey Graham have taken since the opening happened several weeks ago has seemed to, be strident about the power of the president to be able to make this nomination. And, their irony meter seemed to not be well calibrated because some of the things that he said just seemed to fly in the face of the arguments that they made when Obama had the chance to fill a slot. With the passing of Justice Scalia. So it's interesting to me that there is a certain brazenness to what Lindsey Graham was saying, because he has to recognize that the words that he was offering, were just so contradictory. And as Chuck Schumer had said earlier in the day, completely hypocritical to the stance that they had taken when Obama was in office. And so I think that's why the Democrats are making hay with the argument that this is a raw power grab. That's the kind of language that they've been using, and that this is going to be detrimental to the politics on the Hill. We're already in a polarized situation. We have the parties at their throats with each other on these kinds of public policies. And this is only going to entrench the bad feelings even more. And, it's funny because you left off sort of one last little phrase that Lindsey Graham offered, which was he has never seen anybody more capable in his time in the Senate, which I just found interesting because he's also been there when Roberts, Alito, Sotomayor, Kagan, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch all went up. So it was sort of interesting that he picked her out like that as sort of the leading light that he's had to confirm while he's been in the Senate.
Let's give a listen now to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York. Outside the room, speaking outside the Capitol.
We are voting with our feet. We are standing together. And we are standing against this unprecedented mad rush to jam through a Supreme Court nomination just days before an election.
That said, all they're doing is standing outside and talking. As you said, Charlie, there is nothing they can do really to stand in front of the process.
No, and you know, to be honest here too, is there's a certain hypocrisy on the Democratic side because, of course, they made the claim that Obama should have the absolute right to make these kinds of appointments, and they were upset when Merrick Garland was denied that opportunity. And of course, they flipped their position now that they are in the other seat. So, you know, it's interesting to see the desperation in the Democrats here. It's not unexplained. I mean, there's a reason for this desperation. But I think that there are avenues that they can take after this election if Joe Biden happens to win. And if it happens that both Joe Biden win and the Senate flips to the Democrats, I think that Chuck Schumer and others are going to be pushing for some changes and reforms to this entire process or the judicial branch itself.
Yeah, so that raises the issue. Some Democrats calling on, if that happens, Democrats win the White House and the Senate, to add justices, so-called court packing. Now, candidate Joe Biden says, he says he wants to form a commission, a bipartisan commission, to look at some kind of reforms to the judicial system. What are your thoughts on the prospects for changes that could actually get agreed upon?
Well, I think that Joe Biden has been around politics long enough and he knows his history well enough that he knew the hurdles that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had to try to get over in his court packing scheme. And it didn't end well. I mean, in the sense that FDR got all of the policies he wanted out of an unreconstructed court, the whole idea of court packing blew up in his face. And I think that Biden is cognizant that that could happen. And you certainly don't want that in the first couple of years of an administration if he gets elected. I think that the commission might serve a purpose in this way. I mean, the public might be averse to the idea of packing the Supreme Court, but, you know, we've seen some need at the lower courts, in particular the appellate courts, for some additional judges. We have not added a single judge to the circuit court since 1990. And when we did, we only added 11 to bring the total up to 179. And you have to remember, they have a big caseload. I mean, since 1990, it's gone from about 40,000 to highs in the 60,000s today. So I think what Biden could do and what the Democrats could do is say, well, we're not going to pack the Supreme Court, but we're going to start to add some needed positions. Of course, Biden would have the opportunity to make those nominations. And because the appellate courts deal with so many cases that never make it to the United States Supreme Court, they could have an effect on the output of law from American courts.
We're talking about the Supreme Court confirmation progress of Judge Amy Coney Barrett with political science professor Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the nomination, the process, the timing of it? And what do you want to know about how Judge Barrett, if she's confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, could affect key issues that could come before the court, that will come before the court, including the Affordable Care Act? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
This week on Beta, the Nationals' frontman, Matt Berninger, talks about his debut solo album, Serpentine Prison.
I'm often writing songs I wish other people would write to me, you know? Like, I'm always imagining what would be the sexiest song someone would write about me.
Saturday at 11 on the Ideas Network.
There are many things to enjoy in Wisconsin in every season of the year. Wisconsin Public Radio is here 365 days a year to serve you with informative, thought-provoking programs. Thank you to WPR members whose support makes it all possible.
Whether you laugh along with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or feed your mind with To the Best of Our Knowledge, you'll always find something to enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Find our program schedule and listen online at WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about today's committee vote on the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett with St. Norbert College political science professor Charlie Jacobs. You can join in with your thoughts and reactions at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. I just want to say I approve of Judge Barrett. Although the Constitution is already somewhat a dead letter, I think it's helpful to get someone who respects the principles and intentions of the Founding Fathers.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. And there's the issue of originalism, how much we try to put ourselves, I guess, in the mindset of the crafters of the Constitution. That's been a long-running issue for the court system, right, Charlie?
It has. I mean, the notion of originalism, and that captures a whole bunch of different ideas, has been sort of prominent in the debate about the way in which we interpret both the Constitution, but also statutes for the last 40 years or so. It's not that new. I mean, certainly we see it raised as a point as early as the 19th century, in the very early 19th century. But someone like Barrett is very much an acolyte of Scalia, for whom she clerked. And, you know, her idea is this notion of original meaning, which is tied to the idea of textualism. And in essence, what it asks of us and asks of judges is, you know, you want to look at the words of a document like the Constitution, you know, using what a reasonable person at the time of the ratification might understand it to mean. And there are critics of this because the argument is that we really ossify the meaning of the Constitution because we might be stuck in the 18th century or the 19th century and not really have a good grasp of how it would apply today. But others would argue that that's very much in line with democratic theory because we want to make sure that this contract that we created, the Constitution or even the statutory provisions we create, mirror what was meant by those who wrote it. And if we don't do that, then we're giving a bunch of unelected judges the opportunity to say whatever they want and invest their own ideas and ideology. So it's a fraught kind of debate. But you know, Jim's position is one that is sort of winning the day among conservatives, which is we have to return to first principles and try to understand what the founders meant by their words in the Constitution.
Thanks for the call, Jim, at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us now in Mauston. Nate, hello.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say that the idea of originalism, I followed this, and I think this is a totally bogus idea. It can be manipulated by any judge, any way they want to come out with whatever interpretation they want. They just manipulate the words. So that's totally bogus. More important, what is at stake here, and I would favor consideration of increasing the Supreme Court, because what you have is Mitch McConnell brazenly using, and the Republican Party brazenly using, their authority and their power to do whatever they want to the Supreme Court. And the Founding Fathers never envisioned the power of political parties the way we see them today. I think the guest will attribute. And that, therefore, in order to have a voice to the people based on what the elections will say, slash Biden maybe being elected, he needs to have a voice for all the millions of people who voted for him, not just the grab that Mitch McConnell wants to make.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. Well, that going back to the founders' intent, yeah, they didn't know what a political party was, at least not in the sense we understand it today, right, Charlie?
Right, and you know, there's a lot to unpack in what Nate offered us, and on the issue he raises with originalism. You know, it's funny that there's a famous article written by Justice Scalia, who's really sort of the founding father of originalism as we know it in its modern form. And the title of this article he wrote was Originalism, the Lesser Evil. And it implied in that title is that in and of itself, originalism is still evil. I mean, there's still problems with it, and he recognizes it. And in fact, he often called himself a faint-hearted originalist because he understood that sometimes you couldn't really discover what the text meant, or you were bound by precedent and you couldn't escape that. So that he understood much of what Nate is offering us, which is it's as problematic as almost any other approach you take. And you know, what's interesting about his second comment about Mitch McConnell is that, you know, from about 1900 to 1967, Only one nominee to the court was defeated out of 43 that were put up for nomination. And that was because of significant bipartisanship that existed at the time. And so we've really seen an erosion of that kind of comity that exists in the Senate to try to support what appear to be appropriate nominations by the President of the United States.
Thanks for the call. Rick joins us now in Rhinelander. Rick, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my question is about originalism, this sort of rigid interpretation of the Constitution. If one were to take that as the actual intent, Article 2 of the Constitution only uses pronouns like he in regard to the president. If that were the case, clearly the originators of the Constitution, the signers, intended for only males to be able to not only occupy elected office, but to vote. Ultimately, the Constitution was amended in the 20th century to allow women to vote, but nothing, there was no amendment that allowed them to hold elected office. So if you were to take this originalism to what the intent of the founders was, no woman could right now run for the office of the presidency.
Rick? So thanks a lot. We're running short on time. I wanted to bring Charlie in that. Could we get that literal, I guess, with our constitutional originalism?
Well, and Scalia has written about this, and he said, you know, he distinguishes himself from a literalist. But, you know, Rick does make a good point, because if you are honest with the idea of original meaning, and I want to make that distinction between original intent, because we're talking about what people thought it meant rather than what the drafters intended it to mean, you do get stuck. And even Scalia would sometimes admit, sometimes you just have to ignore originalism for what would be a more appropriate outcome. And that would probably be his argument about overcoming those male-centered pronouns and the problems with property ownership of slaves and those kinds of issues that existed. So, again, it's the problem with being a faint-hearted originalist. If you are absolute in its application, it probably won't work.
In our last minute or so, Charlie, this is expected to be a speedy process. I think Senate working through the weekend, confirmation maybe exactly 1 week out from Election Day. What are you watching for if there's any kind of drama in how and whether that's going to happen?
I mean, quite honestly, I don't think there's going to be drama up to that point. The drama comes after she's sworn in. There are some big cases that she will tackle immediately, including the Obama care case that is front and center, and some others that might be a little arcane but are still central to our understanding of the power of the presidency and other offices at the federal level. So to me, this is the easy part. Buckle up for the rest.
Charlie, thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Charlie Jacobs is a professor of political science at St. Norbert College. We talked to him today about the vote to send Judge Amy Coney Barrett and her Supreme Court nomination to the full Senate for a vote.